But we did it! We survived the apocalypse. The holidays, for the most part. Hope everybody had a good holiday season. Whatever you celebrated, I hope it was good. Or is good if you're still celebrating. I got Skyrim, so that is going to be very bad for my productivity, I hear. Couple plugs before we actually start the episode. For surviving the apocalypse, the impending doomsday, and while surviving family and in-laws on everybody's part, my novel, Work in Progress, is on sale for 99 cents on the Kindle. So you can get it now till the end of the year, 99 cents. That's a third of the cost. Cheaper than a cup of coffee, cheaper than a cup of shitty gas station coffee. Also, my short story collection, Not My Problem, should be available, hopefully by the time that this goes up, on some other e-reader formats, Sony, e-readers, iPads, if you go through like iBooks. Otherwise, you can still download like Kindle or Nook and read Not My Problem. So if you go to iTunes, Sony, any of those places, type in Not My Problem, or type in Bodayla, B-O-D-A-Y-L-A. All my stuff will come up, and you can download it, enjoy it. Short story collection is 99 cents everywhere, so just get it anywhere you want, and enjoy it. Read it. It'll be a quick read. The short story is for sure, so you can probably read that under... and the rest of your vacation. So enjoy the rest of your time off. If you still have time off, I have to go because I have to get back to doing productive things. And now episode 55, where we talk about the wonderful legend of John McAfee. It's a shame because a lot of people have been talking about it. Now that he's back in the country, nobody's really talking about it. But everybody kind of just is focusing on him acting like a madman. And it's great Kindle work that I got by Wired writer Joshua Davis, and I forget the title offhand. I say it in the episode, though, but that's a great source of things. Everything that was McAfee was doing before all this other stuff happened, so you can kind of get an idea that maybe it wasn't all just an act. So now, episode 55... Because I do enjoy
Beverly Hills
movie.
Cop 3 is on. Is you already have it?
Yeah, I do actually. I do. I fucking love that with fucking Serge.
Oh, dude, the George Lucas cameo.
When is George Lucas in that movie?
In the third one?
Yeah.
When they're at the amusement park and him and his kids are on the ride, or whatever, and they like get stuck or something.
I don't remember this. Now I have to go back and watch Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
Holy shit. The only thing I remember about that movie is that he had... That the guy who we met in the first one, Serge, suddenly became a weapons dealer or a weapons inventor. And he invented this gun that also did like 18 other things.
Mm.
So that there is a scene that when Eddie Murphy breaks into the amusement park and he has the gun with him, he goes to shoot the bad guys and he starts playing a boombox and then something else happens and then he starts shooting. Because it has to happen in threes.
I vaguely remember that.
I remember that. And I remember something like it was like their character was like Humpty Dumpty or Humpty Duffy or Dumby or something like that.
And yeah, there was all these stupid names.
And they were like, do the Humpty Dumpty shuffle or whatever. So because Eddie Murphy's undercover in the suit in the park, which yeah. If it's actually based on Disney World, what I've read about Disney World, that would not be possible because that shit is locked down tight. But he does it, and the kid's like, that's not it. And he's like, hey, fuck you, kid. And then the mom gets all upset. He's like, never mind. And he just starts walking away. I don't know. It's dumb and terrible, and I can't believe they're turning it into a TV show. Well, they're turning Beverly Hills Cop into a TV show, I should say.
Right. Still horrendous. obviously. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who the guy who might be playing Eddie Murphy's son, who is the focus of the show, is I think somebody decent, but I can't remember who it is. I'm blanking on that. But. So we've been recording. So do we actually want to start it?
Yeah, sure.
Do like an introduction?
Welcome to another episode of But You're Wrong. I am Greg DiNicola.
I'm Keith Bordello. How you doing, Greg?
And I'm all right. I'm okay. Just, you know, hanging in there. How about you?
I'm doing well. This was now we're recording this before Christmas. But yeah. Do you want to make predictions about how your Christmas went? Because this will air after Christmas.
How my Christmas went. it's a weird thing. I will say it will be a good Christmas filled with lots of food. Probably, you know, I'm getting older. I'm not going to get like a ton of gifts or anything.
Yeah.
I'll get a few. I think I already know I'm getting Assassin's Creed 3 from my parents.
Right.
But other than that, I think it will have been a solid Christmas. With mostly just spending time with family that I'm looking forward to and enjoyed.
Get some time off.
It's really hard to talk about something in both the future and past tense at the same time.
Yeah, you relaxed a little bit. You ate some good food. You had some good time with your family.
Yeah. I don't see any reason why it won't be a nice 2 days. Although I do have to work Christmas Eve.
Ooh,
and
at the job that I worked.
Yes.
All right. Well, that shouldn't be too bad.
No, it shouldn't be bad because it should be fairly. It shouldn't be busy or anything, but I need to do a little cooking, and I'm just not going to have much time, and it's a little bit annoying. But
you need to cook for Christmas Eve.
Yeah, just a little bit. Not nothing too crazy, but now, I'm going to make a couple things to bring over. So
Now bring over on Christmas Eve or bring over on Christmas?
On Christmas Eve.
Okay, so do you guys do a big Christmas Eve thing and then not so big on Christmas?
Typically, yes.
Okay. Usually, we do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, we do rather low-key, although this year, I don't know. I think we're going to do rather low-key. We used to do Christmas Eve when I had grandparents that were still alive. We would go to church Christmas Eve with them, take them home, and then go out to eat, come home, decorate the Christmas tree that night because we didn't actually put up our Christmas tree until like the 23rd or 24th. But then we would leave it up till like into January, like January 15th we would take it down. So it was because my mother's birthday is January 11th, so we'd leave it up like way past then. So we decorate it after we went out to eat and then go to bed. Then, because this was nice when we were kids, because the first time we saw the Christmas tree all decorated and lit up, because they would put the lights on, but they wouldn't actually like turn it on with the ornaments and stuff till the next morning when we came out and the presents were all under it, which is kind of cool as a kid. Now we don't really do that. This year I'm in Pennsylvania for Christmas, so I think it's going to be rather low-key, pretty fun. We're going to over to my fiance's mother's house for Christmas lunch / dinner, and I think it'll be fairly good. I'll get a few gifts on Christmas, and then later in the week, probably after this airs, I think we will spend time with my family and I'll get a couple more gifts. But I think overall Christmas went pretty well for me. No big complaints. No, the tree didn't catch fire or anything like that.
It wasn't like a Christmas vacation type situation.
No. There was no drunk uncle. Cause I don't have any uncles in my family. I am kind of I'm the closest you will probably get to a drunk uncle.
Gotcha.
And in my fiance's family, her uncle is in California. So, and I know nothing about the level to which he drinks, so I can't comment on that. I would say not a lot, so that would be my guess from what I know of him, so.
I'll accept your answer.
So, I think it was a good Christmas. It was a good Christmas. Baby Jesus came. he's now in the manger. Yeah. So, because, you know, you can't put the baby Jesus in the manger till Christmas.
Well, see, in Quincy they do, and he gets stolen all the time, every year.
So why don't they wait?
Because they're idiots. I heard he already got stolen. I saw him in there the other day, and I heard he was already gone. I'm not even joking. One time they found him, and someone spray-painted him black. They find him in random places. They'll find him in people's backyards. They take him. It's weird. Every year.
I think, actually, the church that I used to go to, and I'll still go to when I'm home, they actually have, like, bulletproof glass up in front of the manger scene now.
See, that's a good idea. They should do that here.
So baby Jesus is not taken. But they don't put him up. They don't put him in until Christmas Eve. Or actually, no, I don't think until Christmas. I think they put him in, like, Christmas morning. Because I used to go by Christmas Eve, and he wouldn't be in there. And I'd say, why isn't Jesus in there? And I was told, because he hadn't come yet. It's not his birthday yet, so he hasn't been born. And I went, that makes sense.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know why my wonderful town here
decides to be stupid and just put him out
a month ahead of time so that degenerates can take him.
The problem is, baby Jesus is so carryable. He's so portable at that phase that he's so easy to steal.
It's not like it's Joseph. Like, you're not stealing the grown man size mannequin. You steal the baby one. He's stupid.
You can fit him under a coat.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
It's dumb. But, yeah, we got a nicer manger scene. And the baby Jesus is actually removable, because you get some and they just do it as one piece. But in this one, the baby
manger and all.
And in this one, the baby Jesus is removable. So I said, oh, we can't put him in yet. And my fiance said, why not? And I said, he hasn't been born yet. We can't put him in. So we got to keep him in a safe place. So that place was on our liquor shelf.
Nice.
And there he rests, protecting our booze until he is born.
Do you think he was making more?
You know, I haven't checked, but I think I might, after we finish recording, I might go mark all my bottles and see if he turns any more into, or I'll put a jug of water right next to it. See if it becomes
wine. I turned water into whiskey.
Now, if that was in the Bible, I'd be all in. If they were like, Jesus turned water into wine, I'd be like, I don't know. Turned water into whiskey, I'm all in. I push all my religious and spiritual chips in.
Your religious spiritual chips.
Yes. It's a fucking analogy. What do you want? Anyway,
a better one.
Fuck you. I'm gonna make baby Jesus haunt you now.
It's all right. You're already talking about him coming.
From my liquor shelf. Anyway, so there's a news story, Greg, that we have not talked about. This one, though, is more fucked up than you probably thought. And that is the story of John McAfee.
I know very little about the story. I know some, enough to get by, but not, I don't know the whole story. I'm looking forward to it.
What do you know about him or the story or anything like that?
What I know is that he was wanted for questioning about a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Someone, I believe, was his neighbor in, I think, Belize.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he was on the run from the police.
Yep.
I think he went to another country from Belize, and then from there, he got arrested for crossing the border illegally, I believe, and then came back to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, that's where he is now.
And before that, he founded antivirus software, software company. Because McAfee's not really around anymore, as far as I know. Like, people don't really talk about that one as much.
No. I mean, the name's still around, but it's not, that's not very front and center.
So a lot of my information that I'm gonna share, and I'm gonna probably read excerpts from it, but I want to give the guy credit, is, it's from Wired. But it's actually a Wired single, because I guess they got so much information, they didn't want to put it all in the magazine. So it's a Wired single. I know it's available on Kindle, because that's where I read it. It's by a guy, Joshua Davis. And it's only 99 cents. And let me tell you, it's probably some of the best 99 cents I ever spent reading this story. So if you have 99 cents, definitely go buy it and read it, because we're not going to cover everything here and talk about everything. Because it's so worth it, because some of the stuff is really fucked up, and Joshua Davis writes it really well. Because he actually went to Belize to talk to John McAfee, because they were wondering, oh, well, what happened to John McAfee?
Because
he had everything. He was a millionaire, and then he moved to Belize all of a sudden. So what happened to him? And it sounds like he went probably back in the beginning of this year, or probably, I'm going to guess, he went like end of last year. But that's not entirely specified in here.
Okay.
But he was just going to like do a piece to see what happens, and then all this other shit unfolded around him. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the first part of this. This is the opening sentence right here. And as soon as I read this, I was like, I'm so glad I bought this. This is fantastic. 12 weeks before the murder, John McAfee flicks open the cylinder of a Smith & Wesson revolver and empties the bullets, letting them clatter onto the table between us.
Sounds like a maniac.
So he says the table is piled with boxes of ammunition, fake IDs, frontiersman bear deterrent, and a single blue baby pacifier.
All right.
Now the bear deterrent and the baby pacifier never figure into this at all, and there's no mention of fake IDs again. So I don't know how they fit into the story.
Okay.
But it's just good to know. McAfee picks up a bullet, and the guy tries to put the gun down. And then McAfee says, maybe what happened didn't actually happen, he says. Can I do a demonstration? He loads the bullet into the gleaming silver revolver and spins the cylinder. This scares you, right? He says. Then he puts the gun to his head. My heart rate kicks up. It takes me a second to respond. Yeah, I'm scared, I admit. We don't have to do this. McAfee says, I know we don't. The muzzle pressed against his temple, and then he pulls the trigger. Nothing happens. He pulls it 5 times in rapid succession. There are only 6 chambers. Reholster your gun, I demand. He keeps his eyes fixed on me and pulls the trigger a 6th time. Still nothing. With the gun still to his head, he starts pulling the trigger incessantly. I can do this all day, he says to the sound of the hammer clicking. I can do this 1,000 times, 10,000 times. Nothing will ever happen. Why? Because you have missed something. You are operating on an assumption about reality that is wrong. It's the same. And then this is the reporter. It's the same thing, he argues, with the government's accusations. They were a smokescreen, an attempt to distort reality. But there's one thing everybody agrees on. The trouble really got rolling in the humid Breedon murk of April 30th, 2012. So what he's talking about is the government. Well, actually, let me back up and tell the whole story. First of all, that scene's fucked up.
Yeah.
Because anybody that's familiar with Russian roulette has seen Deer Hunter is going to be freaked out.
Yep.
Basically, McAfee, and he started his business in 1983, I think. No. He started a couple years after, I think. But 1983, he was working for a software company, and he was doing like a shitload of drugs.
Sounds about right.
He was taking tons of cocaine. I think he was taking Quaaludes to balance everything out, because he was also drinking like a bottle of scotch a day. And then in 83, he decided to sober up. And he went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he claims he has been sober ever since.
Okay.
But before that, when he was in college, he was in college in 68, I think. I think he was in college before that, and he was selling magazines door to door by lying to people. And he would go up, ring the doorbell, tell people that they won a free subscription to a magazine. and they just had to pay shipping costs.
Yeah.
And then they would pay the shipping costs, which was actually the cost of the magazine, and that's how he was selling them.
What a dick.
So he was just selling and that's how he paid his way through college. But I guess he got tons of money because he did that, and then he got a PhD, and I think that was in 68. But then he was doing, like, he started doing drugs. I think he got kicked out from the PhD program. I don't know if he ever actually earned it, now that I'm thinking of it, but for, because he slept with an undergrad student, one of his undergrad students that he was, like, nice. Teaching. But he started getting into LSD, and he was working some other job, and he took some other psychedelic drug, and for whatever reason, it was one I hadn't heard of before, but he took some other like experimental psychedelic drug, didn't feel anything right away, like he was expecting, like, I guess it to be like LSD,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't feel anything for a long time, so he snorted like a whole bag of it, and then he said something in there, and I don't know exactly where it is, I'm not gonna bother finding it right now, but he said something like, he was like, my mind was about to explode. And he was like, it was like that for days. Like, nothing seemed right. Everything seemed on the edge of collapse. Like, he was just completely fucked up from that.
Hmm.
So keep that in mind as I tell the rest of the story.
Okay.
So I think it was in 85, 86, the first computer virus came out.
Yeah, that sounds around.
And it wasn't a malicious virus. It was just something guys did. I think they were in Pakistan. And he got really paranoid by this. And he related it to how his father would beat him for no reason. And decided...
Right. I was waiting for something about that.
Yeah, and decided that in this case, he would do something about it. Which kind of makes sense. So up till now, you know, you're kind of good. He grows his company... over the next several years by spreading his kind of paranoia about computer viruses. Says how terrible they are, makes people think that they are going to bring down companies and destroy computer systems and, you know, cost trillions of dollars and all this other stuff to make people buy his software. At first, I think he started giving out for free, and then somehow he got investors and started selling it to corporations. So... makes his fortune that way. The fortune that we all kind of relate to his name. If you know, we use McAfee yeah. software. And then he's good for a long fucking time. Owns property everywhere. Has a plane, has property in the mountains, in the desert, in Hawaii, all across the country.
He owned the rights to the naming for the LA, not the LA, the Oakland Coliseum.
Did he really?
It was the McAfee Coliseum for a little while.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
And then late 2000s happened. 2008, 2009, everything starts to go downhill. Partially because of that, and because I guess he had tons of money invested in things and all the businesses that he owned. He realizes he's stretched a little too thin. And I guess he had gone on vacation to the Caribbean or Belize or something. So he decides to basically start selling off his property, and he wants to move to Belize. He also, and this is key too, he also wants to leave the country because he gets paranoid that people are going to sue him, and he would be harder to sue if he's in another country.
Yeah, okay, all right.
I mean, kind of makes sense, but...
Yeah, I see where he's going with it.
But again, like, paranoia is kind of creeping in there. So he wanted to move to Belize, and this is something that's from the book, too. He says something like that he liked that the settlers were pirates, and Belize retained a spirit of lawlessness.
Huh. It's kind of funny for a guy that's made his money on antivirus software.
Yeah. And who's constantly paranoid, it seems.
Yeah.
Also, fun fact, Belize was at one point the sixth highest murder rate per capita in the world.
That sounds like a great place. So the Although guys... it also doesn't sound like he's afraid to wield a gun either.
Right, but at this point we don't know that. I mean, at this point in the story, it's not super obvious. I don't think they don't mention any guns before he gets to Belize.
Okay.
He's an unarmed man. So he buys land, which I think it was a swamp, like on the coast, like kind of swampland, and then he fills it in, and then he starts slowly building like a compound on there. Like he builds a bungalow for him, and then as time goes on, like he expands it, and then he actually starts getting more people on the compound, and he builds more bungalows.
Okay.
For people. I think I want to say it was like 2 or 3 acres that he got. But he also starts importing stuff to fill the bungalow, and they specifically mentioned ancient Tibetan art, and he imports a baby grand piano.
Now, so useful.
Now here's the thing. Here's the best part. Do you want to take a guess as to what it is?
He doesn't know how to play the piano.
Exactly. He can't play the piano. And there's a part where he talks about when he first moved there after he built, I guess, his bungalow, and he was living there and he had the piano and he didn't have the internet. And I guess he just had like electricity. I don't even know if he had that, but he didn't have internet for sure. And at night it was just quiet. He could just hear the waves. And he would just play tunes on the piano, and he described it as magical.
Okay.
Then there's also a part he fears getting old. He's worried about getting old. So every other week he injects himself with testosterone.
All right.
And I immediately think of somebody we've talked about before.
Jesse Ventura?
No, who injected themselves with bull semen for the testosterone. But I'm not comparing him to Hitler, but still, like, you know, it's kind of weird that you would inject yourself with testosterone just because you're like, well, I'm afraid of getting old, and then just randomly start doing it, especially in a country like Belize.
Yeah, I cannot imagine that the supply of testosterone in Belize is all that clean or regulated or anything like that.
Well, I'd be worried about the needles in Belize.
I don't think I'd like any of it. The whole thing stinks. I wouldn't do it here.
Yeah. So then he starts like a shitload of businesses, because I guess he's bored in Belize. He starts like a cigar business. He starts like a water taxi business, I think, and a couple other ones. And then one day he's in this other area, I think a little bit nicer area, and he's at a restaurant at a resort. And somehow he starts talking to, I wrote her name down, hang on, Allison Adonzio, who is a microbiologist. And she's in Belize. She is researching. I think she's working for a company that I don't think she's doing this work for. But she's interested in trying to research how plants have antibiotic properties.
Okay.
And I guess that's part of the reason that she was vacationing in Belize, because it was like her passion, but that's not the work she was doing. I guess she was trying to figure out how to make another Viagra or something like that. But McAfee fucking flips on it and goes, holy shit, that's fantastic. That's going to revolutionize the world. And then he goes off probably for fucking hours on it. They form a partnership. And he says, I will build you a lab on my property and you can work down here. So she quits her job. And he pays her, and builds her a lab, spends a couple million, I'm sure, building her a laboratory with equipment and stuff on his property in Belize to figure out how to turn plants, figure out new antibiotics from different plants and shit like that, because he thinks it'll revolutionize the pharmaceutical world.
Okay. Natural cures, I guess.
Yeah. So he's hanging out, meanwhile, in shady parts of towns. Just shady parts of towns.
I can't imagine you'd have to go that far in Belize to find a shady part of town.
Hang on, let me see if I can find one of the lines here. Because they say at one point he starts spending his time in a place called Orange Walk. Oh, one thing he said, what I'm looking for is, one thing he said about Belize, he said, Belize is so raw and clear and so in your face, there's an opportunity to see something about human nature that you can't really see in a politer society, because the purpose of society is to mask ourselves from each other.
All right. I feel like he might be taking that a little too far, but all right, okay.
So he spent more time in Orange Walk. This is what I was looking for. It was 5 miles from his compound, and McAfee described it in an email to friends as the asshole of the world.
When's that term been used before?
I don't know. But he says, the asshole of the world, dirty, hot, gray, and dilapidated.
Ooh.
And I'm like,
that's where I would want to spend time.
What assholes are you looking at? That are dirty, hot, gray, and dilapidated. And he says, I gravitate to the world's outcasts. Prostitutes, thieves, the handicapped, the enormously ugly or deformed. For some reason, I have always been fascinated by these subcultures.
He's fascinated by the handicapped subculture?
I guess so, because they're outcasts.
I guess. Okay.
So let's see. He's hanging out with prostitutes and stuff, and he feels bad because they're being abandoned and they have children that are being abandoned by their fathers, even though he abandoned his daughter. But, you know, whatever.
kind of a hypocrite, but, you know, that's okay.
Let's see. Then this is where he kind of starts to go downhill. He says in another email, my fragile connection with the world of polite society has, without a doubt, been severed. My spoken language over the past few months has deteriorated to the basest level of the uneducated, habitual bar patron. My attire would rank me among the worst-dressed Tijuana panhandlers. My hygiene is no better. Yesterday, for the first time, I urinated in public in broad daylight.
That's a little weird. This guy's a millionaire. All right, continue.
So this is where he's going. And then he meets a girl, and this is where things start to take a turn for him.
I was obviously he didn't say that, but I was kind of assuming that he was sleeping with a woman, or maybe he was. I don't know. That doesn't mean anything.
No, I don't think he was sleeping with the microbiologist.
Yeah,
because they don't say that, and they're pretty open about some of the other stuff.
Okay, well maybe not.
So there's a guy, when he starts hanging out at a bar that's also a whorehouse, there's a guy, Paz Novello, who I guess is like, oh, well, I like trying to figure out what people want. So early on, he asked whether McAfee was looking for a woman. When McAfee said no, Novello asked whether he wanted a boy. McAfee declined again, then Novello showed up at McAfee's compound with a 16-year-old girl named Amy Emschweller, and I'm sure I'm butchering that name, Emschweller.
Okay.
And then this is the girl that causes all the problems. She was abused as a child, her mother forced her to sleep with men for money. She carried a gun, wore aviator sunglasses, and had a low-cut shirt.
No.
And McAfee said, I am the male version of Amy. I resonate with her because I lived her story because I lived it. I don't know if that means that his mom made him sleep with men for money, or that just means he was abused.
I think it was the abuse.
Okay. I was a little confused on that part, so thank you for clearing that up. So, for some reason, he trusts her and begins sleeping with her, and he falls in love with her, which we know is a stupid idea.
Yep, very, very dumb.
Because she slips out of bed one night, and she pulls McAfee's Smith & Wesson, and this is a quote from the article, out of a holster hanging from an ancient Tibetan gong in his bedroom.
Okay. I love that that scenario even existed.
And she goes to shoot him while he's asleep in bed, but she closes her eyes at the last minute. She pulls the trigger. The bullet goes wide, rips through his pillow, deafens him, but he gets up, grabs the gun, starts yelling at her, couldn't think of what to do. And then, and this is another quote, finally he told her he was going to take away her phone and television for a month.
That was the punishment?
Yes.
That she... Oh. that's awesome. This guy is fantastic.
The same punishment that dads probably give their daughters for getting like an F on a paper or something like that, or on their report card, he gave for trying to kill her. Now, it also says, she was furious, and then she shouts, but I didn't even kill you.
Oh, because if she had, the punishment would have been much more severe.
Yes. So she go ahead.
Is there a picture of her?
No, I don't think so. There's a couple of pictures scattered throughout, but I don't think any of them are of her. It does show, and let me go back and then, shit. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to lose my place if I do, so no. There's a picture of him with two girlfriends, but I don't think one of them is actually her.
Okay.
It might be, though, because I think one of them is actually 17. So after this, I guess they're talking and they become friends, of course. And there's a town close to... There's a village close to him called Carmelita. There's a song by Warren Zevon called Carmelita. I don't know if you heard it or not.
I'm not sure, but...
It's a fucking awesome song. And what I take from it is that it's... I'm assuming it could be about this town. But it's about Carmelita getting high, getting fucked up, like you're bottoming out in Carmelita.
Mm-hmm.
So she tells him, I don't think he ever heard this song before, though. But she basically tells him that this town that's really close to him is overrun by drug trafficking. So he decides, in his paranoia, to clean up the town.
Oh, awesome.
And part of the reason it's not cleaned up is because the police don't have a police station. So he spends his money and buys a police station. And tells the police to start arresting people and putting them in jail. So because he built a jail in the police station. And the police say, well, we don't have the weapons for it. So he starts buying them M16s, pepper spray, batons. And I think just revolvers or something like that to start arresting people. And maybe stun guns, too. So he buys them all this equipment. And then he actually starts paying them in their off hours to patrol the village. So mm-hmm. the police force essentially is being paid for by John McAfee.
A private owner of the police force. Yeah. Sounds like RoboCop.
it sounds bad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So he decides, though, that this isn't enough. The police are not enough for him, for to protect the town of Carmelita. So do you know what he does next?
I hope that this is right. I hope that he decides to go out on his own and start cleaning up the town.
Yes! Yes, yeah. That's exactly what he does.
A little vigilante action.
So he hears that somebody – I forget how he hears this. I'm not going to bother looking it up now. He gets a complaint that there was a gun fired. I want to say on like Amy Street, his new girlfriend Street. There was like a gun fired by her mom's house or something.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds out who fired the gun and he goes to the house and the person's not there. And he threatens the mother and says, I'm going to be back here tomorrow at noon. And he's here, and he gives me the gun, or he's going to have to hide. is essentially what he says. So he comes back. The mother says that he's not here. And he goes, well, now I'm going to have to find him and hurt him, I think, is basically what he said. I don't know if he says kill him, but he makes a threat.
And then it insinuates that it's not going
to
be good.
Yeah. And then the mother pulls the gun from a bush and hands it to him, and he's done. But then he also storms like another house of somebody suspected of being a criminal. He pulls a car over, a suspicious car. And keep in mind, this is in Belize. So he's doing all this, but nobody knows who he is.
Yeah, it's not like he's, it's like it's fucking Belize. They don't know who the fuck, I mean, I don't even know who he is.
Most people there don't even know what antivirus software is.
Oh, they probably have no idea. I mean, especially, no, they probably have no clue what it is.
I think they say that a pretty good portion of, like, the huts and stuff don't have electricity even, so.
Yeah.
And then that bar that I was talking about before, that's also the whorehouse.
Yeah.
He buys that.
Oh, of course. Why not?
He renames it Studio 54. He tries to renovate it to make it more family friendly, but he still buys the bar. Meanwhile, because the microbiologist is still doing all this research on his compound.
Oh, I forgot about her.
He starts to get paranoid that corporations are spying on him because his work could completely change the face of pharmaceuticals.
Uh-huh.
And he believes that, like, across the river that's by him, he can see men in white suits and that people are following him. So, what do you think he does?
I'm going to say he fortifies his compound.
Buys some guns?
I guess more guns?
Well, he at this point, I don't think he really... at this point, he has at least one gun. But yeah, he buys more guns. Do you think he hires some 24-hour bodyguards?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, yeah, he does do that. Do you think he has guard dogs?
Definitely.
Do you think he picked them up?
Shepherds.
Yeah, well, do you think he picked them up off the street so they're completely vicious?
That's probably not a good idea, but it sounds like he may have done that.
Oh, he does that, and he gets 17 of them.
Ugh, what a bad idea.
So, let's review.
Sure.
We have a man that seems incredibly wealthy. He's spending all this money on things. He seems to be giving money to the police, tons of money to the police, in a drug town. He fortifies his compound, buys lots of guns, has 24-hour bodyguards and shitload of guard dogs. Nobody knows really who he is. I feel like that would look bad.
I mean, it definitely doesn't look good. I think, if anything, you know, he's worried about attracting attention.
And
I think
actually,
he's doing nothing but attract attention to himself.
Well, and don't forget, he also has a laboratory on his property.
Oh, right, where he's finding cures for incurable diseases or whatever he thinks he's doing.
And stuff like that, yeah. So, it looks bad, but it gets worse.
Awesome.
So he gets into a fight with a microbiologist. And she is literally afraid for her life.
Yeah, no kidding.
She flees Belize and gets to America.
You know, I'll tell you, it wouldn't take being threatened to flee Belize for me. But
well,
anyways.
I don't think he actually threatens her, but he gets very mad at her because he feels like she's not doing enough for the in terms of the research and stuff like that.
She's not pulling enough for the cause.
I guess she's not producing enough results and shit.
Gotcha.
So then he starts yelling at her, and that's when she fears for her life and she flees. So that gives you an idea of how bad things are. But he's also worried about this gangster and supposed hitman, I guess, in Carmelita. So what he does is he draws up some papers, some legal papers, that say that if there is a... If he dies for any reason, there is a contract, a bounty for, I want to say it was a weird number, because it must have been like one of those things where it's when it's converted to like Belizean money, it's like $1 million or something like that.
Yeah.
Let me see, because it's
like 15 American dollars and 10 million Belizean dollars.
No, I'm trying to see if I can find it, because it was like It was like $367,000 or something like that. Like, it was just a weird kind of number.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, it was $560,000. But still, I feel like that's a weird number to set up. But it was $560,000 that there would be a hit put out on this gangster for that amount of money. Like, that money is in a trust, and if McAfee ever dies, then that money goes to whoever kills this gangster.
Okay.
And the guy goes, well, I never wanted to kill you. And McAfee goes, well, that doesn't matter now. And the guy goes, well, it looks like if you die for whatever reason, even if somebody else kills you, people still come after me. And McAfee's like, yep. I guess that means that you need to try and keep me alive. And the guy goes, all right, I guess I work for you.
it's almost brilliant.
It's a brilliant idea. It is a brilliant idea, except that it just continues to make him look bad.
Well, yeah, no, it definitely doesn't make him look good, but it's hilariously good.
So I know this is a really long-winded story and it dragged a couple places, but it takes you to this point where he has all this shit happening on his compound. And I think he has more than one – they don't really get into it, but he has more than one woman living there, I think, at this point. And they each have their own bungalow on the property too. So he has multiple women, I think at least five women living on the property. Himself, he has a laboratory. He probably has a couple other buildings. He has like a guardhouse. So, I mean, he has at least 10 buildings on the property, I'm sure. It doesn't look that great. So in April, I think it was called the GSU, and I forget what it was. I think it was the Gang Suppression Unit. I could be wrong, but it was like a Belizean organization against, you know, like drug traffickers and gangs and everything like that, you know. But I would imagine it was kind of like RDEA.
Okay.
So they actually storm his compound. And they arrest him. And his bodyguards. And then they let him go like the next day. Because they don't find anything. Because they think he's producing meth. Is actually what they think he's doing it. In that laboratory. So they arrest him. They can't find anything. They supposedly find one firearm that doesn't have a permit or something, and then but they still let him go. He's on there. He's paranoid that the government's gonna come after him again. He meets with the interviewer again. It's Joshua Davis, and Joshua says, well, why don't you just leave if you think you know you're in trouble? And he says that basically he's the only thing standing between Carmelita and complete destruction. Like, it would just go back to just being the asshole of the world if he wasn't there.
Okay.
He thinks he's Batman of Carmelita, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. He thinks he's like its savior.
And this I highlighted this because I thought this was awesome. The interviewer says, I can't help but wonder if he had lost track of reality. Maybe he imagines that he can fix himself by fixing this little village. And I was like, that is dead on probably what's going on.
Yeah. Definitely.
And then this is another little set dressing piece. He goes, a bandolier of shotgun shells hangs from a chair in front of the piano.
Oh, from the interview portion?
Yeah. There's just a bandolier of shotgun shells hanging in the background. So, always good.
Now, a bandolier, is that the thing that goes across your chest?
Yeah.
Like the yeah, okay. Yeah. I know I should know that, but
I mean, bandolier's not used by anybody really, but there's one of those with the shotgun shells in there. Okay. And then they do the Russian roulette thing again. Just as before, he pulls the trigger repeatedly, the cylinder rotates, the hammer comes down, nothing happens. It is a real gun, it has a real bullet in one chamber, he says. And yet he points out, my assumptions have somehow proven faulty. I'm missing something. The same is true, he argues, with Carmelita. I am not seeing the world as he sees it. He opens the door to the bungalow, aims the gun at the sand outside, and pulls the trigger once more. This time, a gunshot punctures the sound of the wind and waves. You thought you were creating your reality, he says. You were not. I was. He pulls the spent cartridge out of the chamber and hands it to me. It is still warm. Now, do you have any idea how he did that? Because I don't.
God. No. Unless, I mean, the only thing I can think of is that he switched something out.
That's what I was thinking, too. He must have switched something.
I don't see how that would be possible with a real gun and a real round. No, not with the real gun necessarily, but a live round. I don't see how that would ever be possible.
Yeah.
He must have just, like, quickly switched it or something.
That's what I was thinking he must have done. Because that's the only way I think he could do it. So then, like, 8 weeks after that, that's when, and that puts it in November. Well, two things happen in quick succession. One day, his dogs start dying, and they've apparently been poisoned.
Mm. Now, is that for certain, or is he just assuming that?
This is what McAfee says, is that the dogs were poisoned.
Okay.
He says they were, some of them died, a couple were sick and vomiting, and so sick that he shot him through the head to put him out of their misery and bury them on his property. I think it's 2 days later is when the neighbor dies.
Okay.
And the neighbor is Greg Fall. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that last name right. F-A-U-L-L. And he lived like two houses down, but I guess he constantly complained about the dogs.
Gotcha.
So obviously, I mean, he's been complaining about the dogs. The dogs are poisoned or die. A couple days later, he dies. It would make sense that they would want to question McAfee.
Yeah, I would. That's logical.
Also, because, I mean, he had so many people living on his compound, it's possible that maybe somebody else did it too, and he might know who did it or if somebody was overly upset about it and all that.
Yeah, or if McAfee did it, someone else on the compound would know about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of options there.
Now, McAfee says that he didn't do it and he didn't hire anybody to do it. And again, he's just one for questioning and all this. But he says that at that point, basically, he says it's the GSU again, the Gang Suppression Unit. I don't know if it's them or the police or whatever. But I guess cops come to question him, and that's when he starts going on the run. And then he's being chased. He says he's hiding. You know, he's hiding out. He's using disguises. He pretends to be an old man. He grows his hair. He wears fake dreadlocks. All this other. He's hiding out in attics and jungle in the jungle and doing all this stuff to disguise who he is, to get out of the country or to protect himself and try to make it out of the country, because he thinks that they're actually after him because they still think that he's making meth. And that they have something against him. So, let's see. When he first saw the police coming, he dug a hole in the sand and buried himself in it. He pulled a cardboard box over his head to make sure he could breathe and stayed in there for several hours.
I heard about that.
So, his initial reaction, McAfee's initial reaction, is that the GSU was trying to kill him. Says, I thought maybe they were coming for me. They mistook him, being the neighbor, for him. They got the wrong house. He's dead. They killed him. It spooked me. So he thinks that they were coming after him. They killed the wrong guy by mistake, and then they were coming after him again.
Right.
So he thought that if they caught him, he would be tortured or killed, and that would be the end of him. So he goes into hiding. He calls this guy again. I mean, he's bouncing all around, but he calls this guy again, and he's with Samantha, who's one of his girlfriends. And he says they've been subsisting on Oreo cakester cookies and cigarettes.
That's a hell of a diet.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, living really healthy.
Yeah, obviously.
Meanwhile, in all of this, he's giving interviews to, like, CNN and MSNBC and ABC. But he has this whole routine, and I don't know entirely how it worked, and they don't really get into it in a different article that I read. Because that's while he's on the run is where the single ends. And I hope they do another one. Like, this guy has information and does another interview with McAfee so he can get more information. But there was a passphrase and a response, and they had to they had to switch cars. Like, it was a whole cloak and dagger thing, and then he would give interviews about what was going on.
Is it like Casino switching the cars?
I think so, yeah, pretty much. So they did all that, and he would give interviews about what was going on, how they were after him. And there was one website that they did an interview with, and I think this is how he ended up getting caught, and I could be wrong on this. But one website, and I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was Vice.com.
Okay.
They did an interview with him, and they took a picture with him. And they put the picture on the website with the interview. The picture was taken with an iPhone or a cell phone. And if you have the feature turned on, GPS information is embedded in the picture.
Oh, yeah.
So the GPS information was embedded in the picture, and he claimed that he falsified that information. But I think, like, 2 days later, he was caught in Guatemala.
Okay.
And then Guatemala detains him. He fakes a heart attack. And then shortly after that, he gets rushed to the airport by the Guatemalan police, sent back to Miami. And now he's saying that he played the crazy card on purpose because he – and this is a quote from him. He says, "What's a better story? Millionaire, madman on the run? You," and he's talking about the media, "saved my ass because you paid attention to the story. As long as you are reporting, it is hard to whack somebody that the world is watching." Which kind of makes sense, but from what you read in the Wired piece, he sounded crazy for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he might be saying that now to, like, kind of fit back in and reassimilate himself in America, but it sounds like he's probably been nuts for more than just the last couple months.
He definitely sounds crazy. He says that, like, he faked the heart attack and all that, which I'll believe. But he says he's been playing the crazy card just to try and survive. He says that he's broke now. His whole fortune is in Belize. His whole property is in Belize. And I suppose that he's not going to return to claim any of it. I don't know if he could send, an intermediary or whatever to get money out of the bank or whatever, but I guess he claims that he's broke now and that's all he has. He also says, I guess, that he's not going to change his name because the McAfee company is really upset because all this is actually bad publicity for them.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Well, I mean, at least that's what they're claiming. I mean, anybody who's seen the movie Scarface is going to think that he's a gangster. I mean, anybody that opens their eyes and sees guards with shotguns and shit are going to think he's a gangster.
Right.
So, at some point, I feel like he should have been like, you know what? Maybe I'm doing a little too much.
I don't think he has a good judge of limits. I don't think McAfee ever sits back and says, you know what? I think I should take it easy on this.
You know what? I'm just gonna chill out.
Yeah, I'm gonna not go to the utmost extent on this situation. I think I'm gonna relax a little bit.
Right. You ever think he was like, you know what? I'm gonna stay in tonight. I'm not gonna go out and patrol Carmelita for crime. I'm just gonna stay in. I'm gonna slowly work my way through the box set of all seasons of Cheers.
That would be awesome.
I don't think he did that though.
No, he definitely didn't do that. He definitely did not spend the night with Norm.
He spent the night with like five other women between the ages of 17 and 20.
That's ridiculous.
Keep in mind, he's like in his 50s. Or actually, no, I think he's in his 60s.
Oh, really?
I think he is.
Man, he's got a lot of energy.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I think I want to say he's like he's probably like manic or something.
Yeah. No, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
If they were like, well, he's definitely got some. I mean, I'm sure he obviously has issues because of the way he was raised and abused as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I feel bad about that, but I think he has something else going on where, like, there's got to be something else going on with him that gives him this, like, paranoia and shit. I don't know. Maybe it's leftover shit from when he did LSD and that other weird drug.
Yeah, and really just fucked himself up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you feel bad that they were abused as a kid. And it's like, you know, it's terrible. You know, you wish that never happened. But it's like, man, this guy's a menace now. Like,
yeah,
he could really, I don't know. Like, maybe he hasn't hurt anyone. Maybe he didn't kill his neighbor or whatever. But I would not trust this guy.
I mean,
he sounds like he's a little bit of a loose cannon.
See, the thing is, I could see him trying to, with the way he thinks, I could, and some of the stuff that he admitted to, I could see him being like, well, this guy poisoned my dogs, and I confronted him about it, and he lied about it, so I had the police lock him up in a prison. Or he resisted arrest, and I shot him. And, like, try to make it legitimate?
Yeah.
But I feel like he didn't do it because he's like, no, I didn't do it. And I'm like, well, I mean, with everything else that he's like, no, yeah, I did this. I made a deal with a mobster to basically become my bodyguard. You're kind of like, well, that just seems weird. But like this one thing, you'd be like, no, I didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would he not? Why would he not tell you?
I feel like he would try to legitimize it. Unless killing that guy, he had his one moment of clarity. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
But you're right. You're right. It wouldn't really fit in with his personality, I don't think.
Yeah.
Or at least from what we can tell from his personality.
Yeah. With his psyche, I feel like, from what I can see, like, I'd be like, well, I don't think he necessarily did it. Now, the other thing in the story that I forgot to mention is he posted on on some drug forum about something called MDPV, which is an ingredient in bath salts.
All right.
Bath salts being the drug that was responsible for the guy that ate the other guy's face in Miami. I think we all remember that, and there was something else, something similar, where in both cases the assailant was shot multiple times and didn't go down.
Yeah.
He supposedly posted about that and how he found a way to purify it and increase the high, and the high was completely worth it, was completely worth the paranoia and something else, because the sexual pleasure you got while on that drug was so fantastic. It was totally worth it.
Uh-huh.
Now, he says that it was a bet that he had from a friend that said, I bet you can start a forum post that wouldn't get like 1,000 replies or something like that. So he figured, well, I'll post about this. Why not post about this amazing thing that you can make even better, you know, and take out all the bad stuff from it? Because he was basically saying he could purify it and get all the shit that makes you turn into a zombie, essentially, out of it.
Right.
And people claim to not remember him making it or taking it. But it's all people that were around him. You know, everybody on his compound that he was paying and shit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
You think he was, like, brainwashing these people? And it doesn't really sound like it, but
I don't think on purpose. I don't think he was purposely brainwashing people.
Okay.
I mean, I think he was taking people that were in a bad situation and making them better, and making these people just kind of immune to other stuff, and making them trust him, so that if he was like, hey, I gotta go to the bathroom, and then he was snorting whatever in the bathroom, they wouldn't really care, and if they said, oh, are you taking drugs? He would say no, because he says that his compound was alcohol and drug free, because he's been sober since 1983.
Uh-huh.
Now, how true that is, I don't know, because he does seem like he's on some kind of drug with how he's acting.
Also, how would he know about how great the sexual experience would be on the bath salts if he hasn't taken any drugs?
But I think he's saying that he made that up. He made all that up.
Oh, okay.
But then again, like, let's say he was able to purify it somehow, or he took some, you know, watered down version of it. Maybe that also added to his paranoia and shit.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, it's a weird fucking story. And the news is glossing over all this stuff where you're just like, there's something wrong with him. Like, even if he's not on drugs and maybe he's not a murderer, like, something's off with him.
I I did not realize he was that nuts. I mean, I all I heard basically was that he was on the run and he came back and he was wanted for questioning. That's pretty much all I really heard about it.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to the story, and I think a lot of it didn't come out till this Wired article came out, because they were the ones I think had the exclusivity with him for the most part. And then as he was on the run and he was fearing for his life, he was calling in more media to try and stay alive, essentially. What I don't understand, though, is why did Guatemala all of a sudden just put him on a plane to the U.S. when Belize was trying to get a hold of him for questioning?
I don't know. And the only thing I can think of is I wonder if there's some sort of a dispute between their nations where they don't work together, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I'm thinking that Guatemala was just like, you know what? We're sending him to America. You guys can sort it out. We're staying the fuck out of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. That is kind of weird, though. I mean, why would... I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just like, you know what? Fuck you, Belize. We don't give... What are you going to do to us? You're Belize. Yeah. We'd rather be in a fight with you than with America.
Well, yeah, I think I don't know if Guatemala has an extradition treaty with Belize. I know that America does.
Right.
But again, he's just wanted for questioning. Now, the person that was murdered was an American too.
Okay.
I'm sure America is probably going to try to, you know, get involved somehow and say, okay, well, we're going to have to question you somehow. Like, you're going to have to be questioned about this and possibly sent to Belize for the murder. But I don't know. He only just came back, I think, last week.
Right. Yeah, it was very recent.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I'm thinking Guatemala was just like, fuck this. I'm staying the fuck out of this one.
Yeah, I don't blame him. Why would you want to get into that?
Because even though I think the embassy said that they weren't going to try and step in and help the American embassy,
mm-hmm.
but like they were probably just like, you know what, we don't want to fight with Belize, we don't want to fight with America.
Yeah,
because I mean, what if America had suddenly decided to get involved? Then Guatemala's fighting with America because we want him, and then Belize is saying that they want him. Just ship him back to America and let us sort it out.
Yeah, you better off. I mean, Guatemala's... I was just going to say they have better things to do than get involved, but I don't know if that's true, but you know what? They're better off just not getting involved.
I feel like...
They're probably like, ugh, why did he even have to come here?
Yeah, I feel like it won't help them.
No, it definitely does not help your cause.
I'm sure we have some kind of trade agreements and aid agreements with Guatemala. That Guatemala's like, we don't want to get involved and we don't want to lose anything that, you know, America or maybe even Belize is helping them with. So fuck it.
Yeah.
They probably made a deal. They probably had, you know, a scene where the Guatemalan president's on the phone with the Belizean president and the Guatemalan president's like, look, I'm sending them to America. You can fuckers can sort it out. I'm just staying the fuck out of this. And the Belizean president was like, all right, fine. He was going McAfee, who?
Yeah, who the fuck is John McAfee?
Why the fuck do I care about this guy? He murdered an American. Oh, okay, he didn't murder a Belizean guy. I don't give a shit.
Who the hell is John F. Kennedy?
You know, McAfee antivirus. McAfee antivirus boulevard.
Ugh. Well,
I really
gotta say, I'm very happy that you informed me on some of that, because that's some good shit. I'm really looking forward to doing a follow up on that someday.
Yeah, I really want to know what happens to him. I'm really looking forward to the. I really hope it's like Barbara Walters that interviews him.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be fantastic. He's already sold the TV and movie rights to his story.
So. Oh really?
Yeah, I think he sold them while he was in captivity.
Ugh. So he's probably got money again.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, even to you, sir, and to anybody actually listening, do check out. Hang on, let me get the actual name of the thing called, the name of the story. It's called John McAfee's Last Stand.
Okay. That's on the Kindle?
Yeah, and it's Joshua Davis. I read it over a couple days. I mean, you could probably read it in a day, but I read it kind of sporadically over a couple days. I mean, it's a pretty quick read, but there's a lot of detail and stuff and things that he said and more of the story that obviously I just didn't cover. But it's a good one, and like I said, I hope that Barbara Walters follow-up. I hope there's also some kind of a follow-up on this, too. Because I feel like this guy seems to have a little bit more inside access also.
Right. Well, yeah, it sounds like he's getting a pretty wild interview there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, too, about, like, the storming of the compound in there and stuff that's pretty good that happened in April that I didn't mention just because of the time, but...
I will probably check that out.
Cops did not like him, please. And
you
too, kids.
You can change the future, too. Check it out. I don't know why. I felt like I needed to get another Back to the Future reference in there.
Kids! Marty, we gotta get to the future. What happens? It's your son, John. He becomes an asshole.
He invents an antivirus software.
Oh, that actually sounds pretty good. That sounds great. Then he becomes a paranoid lunatic. Oh, that doesn't sound as good. That doesn't sound great. Can you just tell me what I do, and then I could not do that? You beat him, Marty. You beat him.
Can you just tell me, like, should I not try not hit him? Was that the problem?
You beat him, Marty. What the fuck, Doc? Is that really? You're going to tell me how to raise my kids now? And then he just takes a trash can lid and starts whacking Doc on the face.
What is this, a Three Stooges episode?
Because he's an abuser.
All right.
The Marty that is John McAfee's father in this.
What an idiotic concept we just came up with.
Where did that come? I forget it.
I don't know.
It was all your idea, so your fault.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. To find out more about this topic, any final thoughts, Greg?
No. Just what I said. I'm looking forward to more info.
Well. As soon as I find out more, I will do a follow up.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to the update. I can't think of the show. Unsolved Mysteries update.
Oh yeah, now some updates. Actually, I have a few updates for a future episode that we'll have to get to. Not the next one because I think that'll be our year in review, maybe a little bit, or I don't know what we'll do for that one, but. Maybe the one after that we'll talk about a follow-up on Jesse Ventura.
Oh, excellent.
And his conspiracy theory. I finally watched the time travel episode.
I haven't watched it yet.
And you will like that one.
Oh, awesome.
Amish Mafia. I watched a little Amish Mafia, which we got to talk about.
Oh, boy. Yep, and, I'm ready for that.
And remember the World War II... pigeon message that was unbreakable.
Oh yeah, has it been broken?
A Canadian thinks he broke it.
Oh,
and just to let everybody know, it did not say Hitler lives, or that Hitler escaped. So I was a little bit wrong on my predictions. It's actually really not that interesting, but people are arguing that he didn't break it, and he just made it up.
Yeah, that's definitely impossible.
So
he's just like, he's Canadian, right? So he's just like, the message says it's okay to wear a jean jacket and jeans at the same time.
Eh? Don't you know? Eh?
It's a teardown. Homes on homes.
Sorry. Sorry for the sloppy handwriting. Eh? But all that stuff to look forward to in the, we'll say in the new year. Well, that's it for us here on But You're Wrong. I'm Keith.
I'm Greg.
You can also cut boredom by checking us on Facebook, facebook.com/butyourewrong. On Twitter, at BYWpodcast. Send us your paranoid stories at BYWpodcast@gmail.com. No regrets and the other thing that we haven't figured out. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.